Worked on a play this afternoon. It's kind of hard to focus, but help us to focus on your word. And then after we're done, to get right back to the play and focus on that and do the best we can, because your work is worthy of it and you are worthy of our attention. And I just pray that it might be a blessing to others and a help to others. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, we do have the flyers back there for the play. Okay, Daniel 3, this is the first world kingdom. The dream was given in Daniel 2, so this is Babylon. And then if you go to Babel in Genesis chapter 11, you have the new world order in action. And here it is, again, Babylon with Nebuchadnezzar, and the Federal Reserve published it in the 1930s on the Federal Reserve note. And so they're wanting to get it together again, and when you read the Bible, you already know what's going to be printed in the newspaper, because the newspaper is way behind the times. And then you try to figure out, how is this going to take place? So this is going to show us that there's two key ingredients to get the world together to worship an image. And one is have a huge huge image. And then blare the music to move the people. Okay, so any stadium, any professional stadium, that's how you do it, and the government knows how to hit the right note to get strange reactions. Okay, if they want to get rid of a crowd, they know what note to hit, so it makes everybody pee their pants and they run home. Serious. They know what note to hit, so it causes the body to relieve itself, and the people get embarrassed, and they dispel a riot that way. And then they know what note to hit to make people move. They've been working on this for quite a while. And they experimented on this with Noriega. Remember that name in the past, Noriega? They sat outside his palace and he came out like a babbling baby because of the music that they were experimenting on him during that day. And now he's in a United States prison. Guy from another country, United States prison. That's something. So Daniel chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar. Type of the Antichrist here, but when you read his story in chapter 4, we just might see him in heaven. Just might see him in heaven. But he really, the only way God deals with a proud man is he's got to smack him upside the head. That's the only way he can deal with a proud man. And in Daniel 4, he smacks him upside the head, and he accepts it and gets right. So Daniel 3, 1. Daniel's sitting in the gate, chapter 2, verse 49. So he's in a pretty prestigious position, and then his buddies are out in the audience. And it says the king made an image of gold, whose height was 70 cubits. So if a cubit on the average 18 inches, so we're talking 90 feet tall. 90 feet tall. And the breadth thereof, 6 cubits. You can see in the Bible, breadth is width. It's our word for width. So it says the height, 90 feet tall. The breadth, 9 feet. So this could be an image of him, or it could be, it seems to be more likely an obelisk. An obelisk is a Washington Monument, 555 feet tall, Washington Monument. Okay, it's a pagan symbol, and it's a worship of the sun, and it's a worship of sex. Okay, and so that is what is pushing the political agenda. So it's an image of gold, and of course the Antichrist. So this is a forerunning, a foretelling of the kingdom under the Antichrist. Okay, and it says he set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. What else is going on in Babylon? If you would go to Zechariah, what else is going on in Babel? Zechariah 5. So Zechariah 5, the entire chapter is about a UFO. An unidentified flying object. And it is something that's wicked. It says that this is wickedness. This is a curse, verse 3. Okay, this is wickedness, verse 8. Almost all the scholars agree that this flying roll is a copy of the scriptures. It's a scroll. It is Goliath's family Bible. Right, because it's 20 cubits long, so that's 30 feet long. That am a large print, if that is a Bible. Okay, that is like the mothership of a UFO. He says in verse 3, it's a curse. Verse 8, it is wickedness. It has a woman that is like flying it, two women involved. And then in verse 11, it shows where it's at. To build it an house in the land of Shinar. Okay, you cross-reference Shinar back to Genesis chapter 11, and that's Babel. So this is Babylon. What's in Babylon? It shall be established and set there upon her own base. So it's got a military base, and high military officials since the 1940s have made agreements with these type of beings. And so they've been in cahoots with this for many, many years. And there's nothing new under the sun. The Bible lays it all out for us. Okay, and so in verse 1, it's in the province of Babylon. Verse 2, Nebuchadnezzar the king sent to gather together the princes, the governors, the captains, the judges, the treasurers, the council, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the province to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. And of course, he just sent out a notice and told them they voluntarily could come if they really desire to come, you know, and they, in loyalty to the king, they just, oh, you know, because he is not an authoritarian type guy. No, he's not going to force them to do anything. Right. Okay, and so it's all the political unders under him, the princes, governors, captains, judges, treasurers, councils, sheriffs, big government. Big government. Bigger the government, bigger sin. Okay, and they're coming to dedicate the image of Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up, and it stood before the image that the king that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Boy, set up, they're using it a lot. Set up, set up, set up, set up. It's kind of like a television set almost. Okay, and so he is going to throw out this idea. He's a tyrant. He is going to force them to bow down against their will. If they don't, they're going to get the hot seat. So there's two types of authority, the way people use authority. In Proverbs 29, verse 2, it says, when the wicked bear rule, the people mourn. But when the righteous are in authority, people rejoice. So there's two types of authority. When the righteous are in authority, people rejoice. That means a person uses authority to display the truth, hoping that people voluntarily subject themselves by their free will to accept the truth. When the wicked bear rule, as in forcing it, the people mourn. When they use authority of a bully and or manipulation, that's how Gentiles thinks it works. Gentiles feel that you got to lord it over them. These are the two types of authority. You give somebody a badge and a costume and they think, oh boy, I got authority. You might have authority, but you don't have power. The power comes from God. Okay, and so this is the general viewpoint that Gentiles think the way a leader is supposed to be is to be forceful, strong, make people do things. Jesus said there's another way of doing this. Jesus Christ said that we are to be a servant. Okay, now people that are sincere and honest recognize that there is a hierarchy and you do voluntarily subject yourself to the hierarchy And that's where you will have a unity as you come through and believe things. And a person will use their authority not to force people, but to influence people. Okay, that's the way it should be done biblically. Okay, the Islamic faith is a faith of tyranny. The Catholic faith, when it gets in the majority, is a faith of tyranny. In the minority, both of those will feign themselves gentle lions. We need to cooperate. We need to tolerate. But when they get in authority, forget toleration. That's done. We're done with that. So they're like a lion just kind of slowly coming along. So that those two religions, they've seen that for years. And if you look at nations that are majority or the religion is Muslim, they will not have the freedoms we have. Won't have it. When it is a majority Catholic nation like Italy, the governments will be in a constant turmoil, or it will be a very poor society. If you go down in any of the Central American countries and even South American, you'll see that the people as a general are very, very poor, and then you'll find a very elaborate, rich Catholic building. And that's just how it works. When America adopted Christianity as the established religion, North and South Carolina actually put it in their constitution that the Christian, they call it Protestant Christian faith, is the established religion of North and South Carolina. Both of those actually put it right in there. They believe, we believe, that people have a liberty even to be wrong. You have a right to be wrong. And let God take care of it. Okay, so Nebuchadnezzar, we know that Muslim faith wasn't around at this time, but yet they were polytheist and they worshiped the moon god, and then Muhammad got rid of everything and they chose the moon god as their famous god, Allah. So verse 4, then a herald cried out, to you it is commanded, O people, nations, and languages. That at what time you hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music. Now this music will be blaring. It will be blaring out there, okay, where the person can't even think for themselves. He says, ye fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king has set up. Now he can command that, and he could force them to fall down, and they can appear to worship, but that doesn't mean they're going to worship in their hearts. They'll fall down, because if they don't, they'll get the hot seat, and they'll maybe really worship or maybe fake it. Okay? And so he cannot force every one of these people in their hearts to worship him, his image. He can force them, okay, the vast majority of them, to bow down, except for the three that won't do it. But he can't force them to worship him. Okay, now they'll fake it. Most of them, it depends on the person, okay, whether they really truly believe it. Okay, it's just, it's like in the public school system. Okay, the public school system operates under three ideas that are against liberty. Okay, one is compulsory attendance. Forced attendance. Okay, that kid's going to sit in a desk for 180 days out of the year, but you can't force him to learn. He might be sitting in that desk, but you can't force him to learn. The second thing is it's a required curriculum. Okay, who is smart enough to know what every young person needs to know in life? Who actually is arrogant enough to think that they're smart enough to know that? I can remember when I was in Colorado Springs, I taught algebra class, and the kids would say, what are we going to take this class for? Algebra, what are we going to use that for? And I'd say, shut up, you might be an algebra teacher. As I'm going in the hall trying to figure out some of the problems, and I come back in and then give them the answer. I mean, okay. It's forced curriculum. Okay, where in the Bible, it's the parents who decide. In Fiji, okay, the little country of Fiji, they have public education, but the students are not required to come. They're not required. They're not forced to come. They don't send out truant officers. Okay, what happens? The kids come. Why? Mom and dad says so. Mom and dad are the one that is leading the family. I want you in school. And so the kids go. And in Fiji, they are able to give a Bible to every kid in a public school. They're trying to do that in Fiji. That's quite a thing, what's going on there. Okay, the third sandy pillar, I guess you could say, of government education, public school, is forced collection of funds. You ever see these? I'm starting to see these yard signs down on 10, other places. It says, support public school. I don't have a choice in that matter. I would rather not, but I'm forced to. And the average person or parent that has a kid in a public school, do they know how much it costs to educate that kid? Now, I'm not counting buildings. Ignore the buildings and the cost of the buildings. It costs a minimum of $5,000 a year for the public education in Indiana. Minimum. I'm being very, very conservative. Okay, years ago, a few years ago, maybe about 15 years ago, there was a study done on that. And in Iowa, the cost of the average student in Iowa public school is about $3,500. And the average cost in New Jersey, in inner city school, was $9,000. And the SAT score in Iowa was one of the highest in the country, and in New Jersey is one of the lowest. I thought if you throw money at it, like the Chicago school teachers are, you know, striking, you throw money at it, it's supposed to get better. That is one area that I don't care what kind of a politician is, right, be they left, as soon as they ask for a raise in taxes for education, nobody opposes it. Why? Because Gentiles worship education. Okay, the Bible's not against education. It's not against that at all. But it's against the idea of a person thinking that if I'm sitting in a formal setting, then I'm gonna be marked. It don't work that way. Okay, so if a parent doesn't want their child to go through public school, they have to pay double. So I'm forced to support the public school, and then I have to pay for the homeschool or private education. Okay, but the average parent, they don't think about this. If they have one child in a public school, and if they don't pay $6,000 annually in property taxes, because 70% of $6,000 goes to the public school, 70% of the property taxes, somebody else is footing their bill. And I tell you who's footing it. Landowners. Farmers. That's who's footing it. Okay? And the thing is if a parent decides to delegate to the public school the education of their children, okay, that a parent has a choice. I'm saying get your nose in a public school and have a say-so. And go through the books with your kids and tell them where it's wrong. And then teach them wisdom where maybe in the test, you know this is a wrong answer, but that's what they're looking for, but here's the right answer, but you go ahead and put what they want. Maybe you can write on the side the right answer, but at least the teacher will accept that because that's what they're expecting. You see, the ideal, public education is not found in any constitution. It's nowhere in there. Where did they come up with this idea? Okay, they do like in the laws establish square 16 for public schools. That's in the plat book. Number 16 is usually where they like to designate for public schools. Okay, but the best form of education is in the free market. It'd be done better, it'd be better quality. like a farm kid. You know, a farm kid, I would say the best form of education for a farm kid is have August and September for school. Take October off. Totally, take it off because that's harvest. I think a kid needs to learn how to work. So then you put them back in school maybe half November, run through November, December, January, February, March, April. And then April, about halfway through April, take a school break so that he can get out in the field and plant. Okay, if an atheist wants his child taught an atheistic education, pay for it. You see, that would be the highest ideal to do it. Okay, but then now what a person does, you got to kind of work in a system or what a person chooses to do. And so this king is going to force these people. You can force a kid. How many inner city schools they force that kid to sit at a desk and he walks out, still can't read? You see, learning has to be of the heart. If a person doesn't want to learn, nothing you're going to do about it. You got to try to figure out how to motivate them. So the king here in verse 5, he is forcing it. People don't have a choice in the matter. Okay, verse 6, it says, "Whoso falleth not down and worshipeth shall the same hour be cast in the midst of a burning fiery furnace." Who would like that as leadership? I would think, you know, somebody as a leader would like to know that people voluntarily want to cooperate and do the right thing. You know, this is just a forced situation. One time I was running through Revelation, I was looking at the mark of the beast, and people often say, "You take the mark of the beast, you're going to hell." And I started analyzing all those verses, and the ones where it said they're going to hell is when it says they took the mark and worshipped. Okay, what do you do when they force it on somebody? Okay, when it's and worshipped, that means they voluntarily put their heart behind the Antichrist. Now, there is where the line is drawn. So in this context, the king is forcing it. Okay, he's forcing it. Verse 7, "Therefore at the time when all the people hear the sound of the Babylonian brass band," okay, "to fall down and worship the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up." Over and over and over it says set up, set up, set up, set up. When you set up an idol, that makes you the god who sets up the idol. "So wherefore at that time certain Chaldeans come near and accuse the Jews." So we got anti-Semiticism, I guess you can say, but whatever. The Chaldeans were political figureheads. These guys are jealous of verse 49, chapter 2. These guys are hot. "Why did you put these four Jews ahead of us?" This is political wrangling. This is jealousy to the highest. Man, they were hoping that those Jews, those three guys, were not going to stand or bow down and worship. Boy, they were hoping, and as they were peeking, you know, it's like a kid say, "So and so is looking during the prayer." Well, how do you know? Were you peeking too? Okay, and so they accused the Jews. Okay, "They spake, said to the king Nebuchadnezzar, 'O king, live forever.'" Yeah, right. "Thou, O king," okay, "thou, O king," singular pronoun, "hast made a decree that every man that shall hear the sound of the Babylonian brass band and all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoso falleth not down and worshipeth, that he should be cast in the midst of a burning fiery furnace." So they're reminding him of the law or the decree that he has passed. And then, you know, he's gotten under a spirit of pride, this king. "There are certain Jews whom thou hast set over the affairs of the province of Babylon." Oh, I see. That's what you're mad about. "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, these men, O king, have not regarded thee." How do you know? Can you read that heart? What do you mean they haven't regarded thee? Okay, and they said, "They serve not thy gods." So what? Just as long as they do their job, "They serve not thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." Okay, now we got a typical reaction when somebody gets mad. Okay, a lot of times we get in discussion with somebody, say about the Bible or religion or something, and they get all mad and hot under the collar. Okay, why? It's based on emotion. How dare you challenge what I believe? Well, you're breathing, aren't you? I mean, if you're breathing, then I guess I could challenge what you believe. People get all mad and bent out of shape. Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Okay, he is mad. You're challenging me? Political figurehead, proud, arrogant. I mean, just watch some of these, if you want to waste the time, I guess, some of these Senate hearings when a Democrat's running it and some guy calls out the person and you don't speak to your honorable so-and-so that way. What way? What do you mean honorable? Person's a low scumbag. That's what they are. They're not used to being talked like that. But, oh, mad, I've been out of shape. So, verse 14, Nebuchadnezzar spake and said unto them. Okay, is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? Do not ye serve my gods, nor worship the golden image which I have set up. Now, if ye be ready that at what time ye hear the sound, okay, why didn't he let him answer the question? He's forcing it. Now, if ye be ready that at what time ye hear the sound of the cornet, flute, harp, sackbut, psaltery, dulcimer, and all kinds of music, ye fall down and worship the image which I have made, well. And if ye worship not, ye shall be cast in the same hour into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. And who is that God that shall deliver you out of my hands? Okay. They got a choice. Okay, these guys got a choice right here. And watch how they answer. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful, full of care. We are not careful to answer thee in this matter. Pretty relaxed. Pretty relaxed. And they said, if it be so, and I like that, if it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now, that's faith. Faith is not positive thinking. They did not say, he's going to deliver us. They said he can. They didn't know if he was going to. Verse 17, if it be so, and 18, and if not. But I tell you, there's a man. Somebody to stand up against no matter what the consequences come through. Okay, that's faith. Okay, a person can just look at the consequences. Okay, if I make this stand, these are the consequences. This is a lot of times when somebody gets saved, say later in life, especially from a different background or maybe a different religious background, and they get saved and they're starting to realize now, the more I get into this Bible, you know, my family's gonna, and my family here, and my family's there. Faith is, I'm gonna do what God says. If my family comes along with it, great. If they don't, I'm going to do what I can to win them. I'm going to do what I can. I'm going to do what I can to serve to win them. You see, that's what faith is. These men had real faith. They did not know if God was going to deliver them that day, meaning as far as from the fiery furnace. They were figuring, okay, God could deliver us from the fire or God can torch us in the fire. Either way, we're out of here. So, verse 19, and the typical reaction, then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury. Okay, why? He feels they're challenging him personally. And in a way they are, but they're standing true to God. Then was Nebuchadnezzar full of fury, and the form of his visage was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Therefore he spake and commanded that they should heat the furnace 17 times more than it was wont to be heated. Okay, the word wont, usual, 7 times. That'd pretty be a pretty strong hint of the trib. Okay, and then it says he commanded the most mighty men that were in his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning fiery furnace. Throw them in. Then these men were bound in their coats, their hosen. Okay, there's an old English word, but it's a common word. Hose, okay, but it refers to breeches or garments or trousers that cover the legs. So their coats, their hosen, their hats, and their other garments, and they cast it in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Therefore, because the king's command was urgent, the furnace exceeding hot, the flame of the fire slew those men that took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And the king, when he saw his own soldiers like that, killed pawns, is like, eh, so what? They don't care about the buck, the private. They don't care about that. They don't care about those pawns. They don't care that those men that died right there that night, their wives were crying. King don't care about that. This guy is a psychopath up to this point. He is so infested with devils, okay? And the only way you're going to get this guy's attention is something shocking is going to take place, and we're about ready to read it. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Then Nebuchadnezzar the king was astonied. We say astonished, but astonied. You see the word stone in there? And rose up in haste and spake and said unto his council, did not we cast three men bound into the midst of the fire? They answered and said unto him, true, O king. And he answered and said, lo, I see four men loose walking in the midst of the fire. They have no hurt, and the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. Okay, uppercase S, Son of God, changed in every new Bible. Yeah. Every one of them take that out. They don't make a bunch of changes in the Old Testament like they do in the New Testament, but this is one thing that they do change. So this is an Old Testament appearance of Jesus Christ. They call it a Christophany, I guess you could say. So Jesus Christ is walking in the fire with the men. Boy, that's a shocker. So, of course, then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spake and said, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, ye servants of the Most High. Okay, Most High, Gentile philosophy, Gentile idea. They're usually polytheists, but they usually have the highest of the one, highest God. Your God is the Most High God. Yours is the top. Come forth and come hither. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came forth of the midst of the fire. And the princes, governors, captains, king counselors gathered together, saw these men upon whose bodies the fire had no power, nor was a hair of their head singed. Neither were their coats changed, nor the smell of fire passed on them. Oh, that's a miracle. So, you know, it's a lot of times people who are smokers, you know, they think, you know, they get around somebody, don't, you know, they throw it away, and it's like, you don't think we can smell that? You know, or somebody goes into a chicken house or a hog barn and come out later, you still smell like something. That's the miracle of it, okay? The miracle there is they didn't smell like fire. So it took something miraculous like this to get this man's attention. Then Nebuchadnezzar spake and said, blessed be the God. Oh, okay, there's the right attitude. There's the right attitude. Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel. Okay, so the Son of God in Galatians 4, verse 14 is a reference to the angel of the Lord. That's in reference to the Lord Jesus. He sent his angel and delivered his servants that trusted in him and have changed the king's word and yielded their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own God. That's quite a miracle. The Lord can overrule any natural law. Walk on water. Turn water to wine. Okay, and things like that. The Creator can overrule the natural laws as He chooses. So, this king, because this is a normal thing, what they think, okay, therefore I make a decree that every people, nation, language would speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces. Yeah, but, fella, come on. You can make this decree all you want, but people still need to accept the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego voluntarily. But it's like, okay, a tyrant can rule something proper, like here, but he's still a tyrant. That's the mindset. Shall be cut in pieces, and their house shall be made a dunghill, because there's no other God that can deliver after this sort. And the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon, and those previous Chaldeans now are more jealous. You see, in verse 29, okay, sure, the king wanted people to worship this king. What he should have just said, okay, we've all saw this, we've signed this great miracle. You would be wise to accept voluntarily the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Forget cutting people into pieces and making their house a dunghill. You can do that, people are going to fake it, but it's not the real thing. It's like many of the colonists fled Europe from the tyranny of the Roman Church and or King George. So when those colonists came over here, the Calvinists that overtook Massachusetts, okay, so they started doing the exact same thing what they fled. If you didn't comply with the Calvinistic philosophy, then you get publicly persecuted. And that's why Roger Williams fled from Massachusetts. He fled down to Rhode Island. He and five people founded Providence, Rhode Island. Rhode Island became the freest of all the colonies because they gave people the freedom of their own conscience. They called it soul conscious, of their own conscience to serve God. That the two things that the Calvinists were mad at Roger Williams were for. One thing was, he said, you have no right to the land of the Indians. You need to pay them for it. They own it. You need to pay them for the land. If you're going to move on that land, you need to pay them for it. And the second thing is soul conscious. And that's why he hightailed it out of there. And then founded the very first Baptist church in the New World. And that's a great heritage. And our free exercise of religion stems back to Roger Williams. And so that's a philosophy of the Bible where we are limited, in the New Testament especially, we are limited to using words to persuade people to voluntarily come to Christ. That's our limitation in the New Testament. Now, if our soul-winning techniques is we got a guy in the street corner, and we said, okay, and then get him down and punch him. If you don't pray this prayer, okay, you get a lot of professions that way, but are they true confessions? No, they're not. Or you could manipulate it or run people through a 1, 2, 3. No, the Lord wants us to lay it out voluntarily and let each person make their own choice. Okay, so that's chapter 3. Hey, we got it done. Let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I do thank you for your words, and I do ask and pray that you'd help us each and all of us to see the authority of the Bible, but yet see that here it is in print, and we would be wise to voluntarily submit to the words of God. In Jesus' name, amen.